Leighton Smith.
Matt Burgess is a senior economist with the New Zealand Initiative, and we'll talk with him in a moment. But first, climate change remains a controversial topic. Some don't believe in man-made climate change. Others believe in some contribution but see no need to react. Some accept what they've been told, that we need action. Others demand that we go back to living in a cave and scrubbing ourselves in the creek with a rock. With the release of the Climate Change Commission plan, there is much to discuss. Matt Burgess, great to talk to you and appreciate it. Thank you. You've done a lot of work on the Commission over the last 2 or 3 years. You have a totally different view to that arrived at by the Commission. While you agree with the Commission's reductions, you reject the Commission's plan as unnecessary and argue for its total rejection. Now, on first look, those opinions appear to be somewhat in conflict.
Oh, not at all. Look, the first point is that New Zealand's made a commitment to reduce emissions through the Paris Climate Agreement 6 years ago, and then a couple of years ago in the net zero legislation, which set a 2050 target. So Parliament's set targets, and that's what our responsibility is. And I'm not here to relitigate what's been decided. Let's take those targets as given. And now the question is, how do we get there? The concern with the Commission's plan that they've released about a week ago is that in the end, their plan won't deliver against the targets that Parliament has set. So my position is agree 100% with Parliament's targets. The problem with the plan is that it won't deliver against them. And that's the issue.
Got just one more question with regard to what you just said about your belief. You're putting the onus on New Zealand when there are probably most of the countries in the world who signed the Paris Agreement aren't living up to their obligations, and some of them are exceeding them quite considerably. Why put New Zealand in a position where we need to oblige the commands, the demands of the Paris Agreement when others aren't? Puts us at a disadvantage.
Well, that's right. So in the end, if we're doing things that other countries aren't, and the onus that we're putting on ourselves is so much greater that, you know, in the end, we lose industries to other countries. In the end, that's counterproductive, doesn't get us towards our targets, possibly kills the whole enterprise. So we have to be aware of that. But one of the interesting things in the Climate Commission's plan or its analysis is to show that actually it's not that hard to reach the targets that we've set for ourselves. If we do nothing further, if we leave current policy settings as we are, we get more than 80% of the way to net zero by 2050. So the takeaway I have there, and that means we have options, and the takeaway I get from that is that actually we don't have to try too much harder. We're basically on track as it is, a bit more of an effort, and we get there. It's not nearly as onerous as probably many of us, including me, have thought up until now. We're actually in pretty good shape. And so, you know, it's possible that the onus will be so small that we don't have to worry about things like leakage, which is, you know, ultimately great news.
Listening to you say that, I've thought of an example. Take wine as a good example of that final peak, so that you'll pay next to nothing for a cheap wine, but if you want to go to the very best wine, and I'll pick Australia's Penfolds Grange, for instance, which is $850 a bottle plus, but you might only get 2% better, or let's make it a maximum of 5% better quality wine for, say, $800. In other words, that it's the final bit, that the 80 to 100% that we're talking about here, that might cost the greatest economically if we go down that road. Any comment?
That can happen. So you've seen an example of that in the government's 100% renewable policy. You know, you can get to 95% without changing anything, but the last 5% kills you. And really, it really hurts. You spend, you have to build a lot to get that last 5%. Mm. That we've got to get to net zero, we get 83-84% of the way without changing anything. So that the question is, where does the last 16%, about 6 million tonnes a year, come from? And the options we've got actually don't get much more expensive over that last 16% in all likelihood. One of the options is to, according to the Commission's own analysis, if we simply raise the ETS price from where it is now, about $38, up to $50 a tonne, over the next 30 years, that gets us to net zero. if we make a deal with one or more other countries to do emissions reduction things in those countries, like the deal that Switzerland has just signed with Peru, that gets us to net zero. If we bring agriculture into the ETS or set up its own ETS, which is what the Commission recommends, that could give us the 6 million extra tonnes we need to get us to net zero. Now, each of those three pathways look very feasible, and it's, you know, certainly, I don't think any of them actually look particularly scary. They'll cover that 6 million tonnes without any trouble at all, and we're done. So it's not like we're running into a sort of everything turns vertical in the last few tonnes. We actually have options that look pretty scalable and feasible.
How important is it to sell this to the public? I mean, what you're saying, and here's what I mean. You're talking about spending New Zealand dollars in other countries to do things there for their benefit rather than ours, apart from it contributing to our emissions reduction. That would be a hard sell to your average punter in New Zealand, wouldn't it?
It should be a very easy sell, because the alternative to doing that is doing all the things that the Climate Change Commission wants to do. So the Commission's plan is 847 pages long. It is filled to the brim with interventions throughout the economy, in transport, in energy, in agriculture, forestry, you name it, buildings, how we shape our cities, you name it, it's in there. They want to regulate everything. They want to tax and subsidise and regulate everything. Now, the alternative to that is things like cooperation with other countries or a minor increase in the ETS or bringing agriculture into the ETS. Now, those are eminently more effective and achievable and, frankly, easy compared to what the Climate Change Commission is talking about. So this is the point. Everything the Commission's talking about is unnecessary. We don't have to. We can keep driving the cars we want. We can take the vacations we want. We can live in the kinds of houses and work in the jobs that we want and achieve our emissions targets fully and genuinely without the sacrifices that the Climate Change Commission has demanded in its draft plan. So my point is simply that actually they're asking for sacrifices that are completely unnecessary. We can be a responsible international citizen and live the lives that we want, and there's no contradiction there.
I find it intriguing. I find it fascinating. I find it actually attractive. If we accept, and a lot of people don't, but if we accept that this is a responsibility that we have to take on, like it or not, what you're really selling us, offering us, is an ability to do it without it having much effect on us at all.
Yeah, we have to reject this idea that there's nobility in sacrifice. You know, we have to hold the line that our responsibility is to lower emissions. We have to reject the idea that we have to make large sacrifices for its own sake. If we can get to our emissions targets easily and without much pain and while continuing to live the lives that we want, we should be going for that. And I think Wellington, officials in Wellington and possibly in Parliament, have lost the idea that we want to be grabbing affordable, feasible ways to deliver on our targets if we can. There just seems to be this mantra that, you know, unless we're all driving electric vehicles, it doesn't count. Well, that's false. We need to be reading the text of the legislation, the text of the Paris Climate Agreement, and the science, which quite clearly says in the end, it's lower emissions that counts, and that's all that counts. And if we can deliver that without making huge sacrifices, we should.
And we can get to net zero.
We can get to net zero on the Commission's own analysis without any trouble at all. We've got 30 years to find 6 million more tonnes. We've got at least three clear, simple pathways that will deliver it. What the Commission is talking about is essentially a government takeover of much of the economy, actually, at least substantial interventions, put it that way. Which, as it turns out, will not deliver any further emissions reductions. We'll still be stuck with 6 million tonnes short if we do what the Commission's saying. This is how misguided and unnecessary their plan is. It doesn't even get us to net zero. So we have to insist that in the end we want a plan that cuts emissions and does it as cheaply and effectively as possible.
Well, you'd agree, I'm sure, that politics is involved in this. Would you call what you have just described, the government taking over so much of the economy, for whatever reason, amounts to the same thing, and that is socialism?
Well, I would say it amounts to a disregard of what the objective is. You know, the goal is lower emissions. That's what the ledge says. That's what our international agreements say. Change Commission were focused on that target, I think they would have written quite a different plan.
So, what was it then that caused the outcome of this inquiry, this commission, which took so long and has cost so much money?
Look, the government for years, and I think the commission's picked up on the government's lead on this, the government for years has talked about transforming the economy as a solution to climate change. Now, it turns out that's not necessary to meet our targets. We should transform the economy if that's what we have to do to meet our targets, if that's absolutely essential, but it's not. Nevertheless, the commission has decided to push that line anyway. So it's decided that transformation is needed. It's then backfilled to try and justify that position. Unfortunately for the commission, it's revealed that there's much shorter and simpler ways to deliver on the emissions target. But, you know, there's something, you know, when you go through the commission's plan, at every step, it's all engineered to give officials more decision rights over our lives. You know, there are checks and balances in there that always lean against the ETS or alternatives to official control. And at every turn, the assumption is that things will be better if we just write another plan. And there's a lack of awareness that policy often fails, that there's a cost to, giving up choice in your own life, and that they're demanding sacrifices that probably certainly aren't necessary and probably won't work. It's just an inward sort of an insular view that is ultimately self-serving, I think. And we have to be able to lean against that without being accused of being irresponsible. It's actually the opposite.
There's a number of different facets to that to discuss. You said that you were surprised when you came to the decision that you have after doing the work and the research that you've done. Am I right?
Surprised?
Surprised? Well, you were surprised. You didn't think originally that you were unaware of what you're now saying, that you thought we would have to make those bigger sacrifices and live a different sort of life.
That's right.
And through the work that you've done, you've discovered that that's not the case.
Well, it's the commission that's done that work. Actually, they're the ones that reveal that we get more than 80% of the way to net zero without changing anything. It's their analysis which shows that the emissions trading scheme is actually quite effective in cutting emissions in terms of, inducing changes in behaviour that lower emissions. So that's been revealed by the commission, and that has been a surprise to me. The unfortunate thing is that having revealed relatively short pathways to net zero, the commission then rejects them in favour of its, command and control approach. Which was not a surprise.
And that's purely political.
It's unnecessary. Whatever's motivating it, it's unnecessary. In the end, it's a long, hard road that doesn't get you to net zero is what they've delivered. So, look, in the end, I think everything the Climate Change Commission produces has to be judged on the yardstick of does it cut emissions and does it take the shortest, most feasible, most effective path to our emissions targets. And in the end, the commission has managed to deliver a plan that can't even meet that yardstick. You know, what's the point of a climate change commission that can't work out how to reduce emissions? You know, what's the point? And so whatever the motivation, they've delivered a plan that doesn't work, and I think they have to start again.
Are they capable of it? Oh, yeah. Is the team that that came up with this plan capable of adjusting it and turning it on its head?
Absolutely, they're capable of it. There's no shortage of talent in there, and my gosh, they've done a lot of hard work over the last year to produce their plan. The chair of the commission, Rod Carr, is extremely capable. It's just a question of whether they decide they want to focus on the direction Parliament's given them, which is to focus on net emissions, not gross emissions. Big difference there. It's a question of whether they want to, if they're willing to tolerate or willing to accept the idea that we want to reach our targets for the least cost and most feasible and affordable way. That's what they're rejecting at the moment, and it's hard to see what the public interest is in that position. And I think if they were to decide that they were to adopt a position of we want to get to our targets quickly and effectively and cheaply, they'd be able to do it in the time available. So they've just got to make that decision. I don't think they will.
I want to quote you. On its face, the Commission's claim that its plan based on government takeover will cost less than 1% of GDP is implausible. Explain why.
Just the idea that the government can intervene as deeply into the economy as the Commission anticipates for less than 1% of GDP. The Commission itself has said that what they're proposing is bigger than Think Big under Muldoon in the 1980s. Now, I'm sorry, Think Big cost quite a lot more than 1% of GDP, and the Commission's even more ambitious again. They've used a type of economic model that may have, we're going to learn more this week. They're going to, there's a seminar later this week that will explain more of this, so looking forward to that. But they've used a type of model that may well have largely left out the costs of the policies that they're talking about. The model looks at the outcomes of those policies, you know, more electricity, less oil, and that sort of thing, and puts that into their GDP calculation, but may not include any details, including the costs of the policies that it takes to shift those outcomes, if that makes sense. So, and that's where the whole show is, you know, it's the cost of the policy that really counts. So we'll see later this week what they've, what's in that number.
What would you think?
Well, we had an estimate from NZIER, New Zealand Institute for Economic Research, 3 years ago on the question of what net zero emissions would cost in 2050. And they came up with a number of between 6 and 22% of GDP. So it's a long way from less than 1% to that. And I have to say, given the extent of the interventions being anticipated, the NZIER estimate looks a lot more feasible, look a lot more realistic to me than what the Commission's come up with.
What sort of audience have you garnered so far with what we've been talking about?
I haven't found an audience yet. I think there's individuals that are receptive, received quite a number of positive emails. Not too many emails that are hostile so far. In the end, this whole area is so complicated, and the problem that we have is to try and find a way to reach the person in the street to help them understand that what's going on is a long way from what's correct or consistent with what's in the public interest. And so we're still finding that audience. I think, you know, the next big step is submissions back to the Commission on their draft plan, so that'll be the next thing we do. But we'll just keep plugging away and just trying to get people to see that something unhelpful and actually against the public interest is going on here.
I've got to ask you this. You would have made submissions, presumably, to media, to newspapers in particular?
Yes.
Any reaction at all?
Just emails saying well done or that sort of thing, or agree with you, and some emails with some questions and so on, but nothing overtly hostile so far. So I sort of, you know, we were right at the start of this process. This whole, this plan came out a week ago. Yeah. We're still reading it. We're still finding the main arguments. So we're at the start of this process, but there's an awful lot of water to go under the bridge over the next 3 or 4 months.
Well, you're going to have an enjoyable time, I hope, over the next 3 or 4 months. You are a man who is focused and certainly in charge of your topic. I've got to tell you that. It's been a long time since anybody has been so astute and acute as you have for the last 20 minutes, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
We should talk again.
Indeed.